Welcome to the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky of Break of Day Capital. I talk to leading experts to discuss a wide range of subjects to educate investors on best-in-class practices to build legacy wealth and positively impact communities. Let's jump in. Hey, everyone. We have launched the BODC Multifamily Impact Fund. Invest with a trusted operator with a track record of success. Our fund offers diversification, risk mitigation, tax benefits, and stringent acquisition criteria. If you'd like to learn more, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com.
Choosing the right insurance coverage for multifamily properties isn't that complicated, if you know who to talk to. At the Garzella Group, we're uniquely qualified to help you navigate the range of policy choices you have, and we're committed to saving you 30% in the process. We do intensive market research and have nationwide relationships, so we can find coverage other insurance brokers simply can't. We should talk. Go to quotenow.biz, and we'll start the conversation.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky with Break of Day Capital. Today on the podcast, we have Anthony Walker. Anthony is the CEO and managing broker of Buckingham Investments, a 60-year Southern California investment real estate brokerage. He's presided in over $1 billion in sales during his tenure and has leveraged his brokerage experience to develop an extensive portfolio of multifamily and commercial properties in one of the most challenging markets in the country. He's also been the sponsor and principal in the acquisition and sale of numerous multifamily and ground-up construction syndications. Welcome to the show, Anthony. Can you start by telling the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gary. First and foremost, I guess I'm a broker. That's my day job, but I got into brokerage so that I could buy assets and be a principal. A lot of people do that. And my thesis was, at the beginning, I was looking for a career change. I was in business school trying to figure out what I could do for myself. And I really wanted to, I decided commercial real estate looked like a great option. You know, people have been making money doing that for hundreds of years. So, you know, why not me? I don't need to learn how to like code or invent something. But I needed to figure out a way to get some money to buy some assets. Although I had a bit, I had a corporate job at the time, almost a 10-year career in insurance before I made the jump. And I had bought a couple little properties and did that with Buckingham Investments, which is now the company that I run. It's been a really interesting ride for me. It is a brokerage company, but I started as a client and really loved their approach. The company's all about investing with people and first and foremost in their education. So we help people figure out how to make sense of investing in real estate. A lot of people are making their very first real estate investment with us. Teach people how to do it in a no pressure environment, very informal, no suit and tie. And then when they feel ready, we help them build a portfolio. So I really liked that approach. I did my first couple investments with the company and I thought, hey, maybe I could make this my, active income day job. And if I'm really good at brokerage, I could use my brokerage income and then my connections and the knowledge that I would build to build a portfolio. So that's kind of what I've done. So I sort of have two businesses. I have the brokerage business that I spend most of my time on during the day, helping people buy and sell a lot of multifamily, but some other commercial and residential investments too, right here in Southern California. I know we'll get into that. That's a bad word for a lot of people in investing these days, right? Or bad two words. But then really, I've also over the last 15 years, use my business income to buy a lot of properties and have scaled up kind of using the same strategies and the finance that we teach to do that. So that's also all been local. I think I own about 175 units today that's spread over, 22 buildings. So these are like small and medium sized apartment buildings. My buildings generally range from, 4 units at the smallest up to 21 units is the largest one. And then I also have about 30,000 square feet of commercial retail space in Torrance. And that's been interesting too.
You mentioned that the education piece and your years of experience as an investor, it's so valuable to a new investor coming, trying to buy their first property or the second property to have someone with your experience to help guide them because you don't know until you know. So having someone that they can rely on, I think is so important.
We pride ourselves on being really a partner with our clients, not just a salesperson. When people come to work with Buckingham, they're basically getting plugged into our ecosystem. So a lot of our clients are using the same property management firms, same loan brokerage, you know, CPAs, ADU construction companies, contractors, you know, whatever. We really have a full suite of people that we're all using to invest ourselves. Pretty much every agent in the company is a real estate investor themselves. And we want to have that credibility when working with our clients. We know brokers get a bad rap out there just for, you know, being the cold calling desk jockeys. And understandably so in some cases. There's some not great brokers out there. There's a lot of really good ones too. But we think that the experience is just so much better if you're speaking at the same level with people and you have that true life experience of being an investor yourself.
So let's talk about investing in Southern California. I invest out of state. So many people do, but obviously there's a ton of opportunity. There's a lot less competition. And if you know how to navigate those rules, I mean, there's, you know, tremendous opportunity. So talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, to me, you know, when I got started, I didn't really consider a lot about other markets. I did invest in a few properties in Las Vegas when I first started off in my career. This was in the subprime crisis. And so stuff was just almost free, you know, and we did okay there, but it really made a lot more money in the Southern California stuff. And at first it was just because it was here. I could drive down to the buildings. I could understand it. You know, our company was operating locally. And so I felt like that was a really easy place to start and get to know things. And then as I got more experience in the industry, you get exposed to a lot of people that really hate Southern California or don't want to invest here. It's almost like that's the talking point for everybody is like hating on California these days, which I understand to some extent, you know, it's challenging regulatory environment, challenging judicial environment when it comes to tenant landlord law. It's an ever-changing landscape regarding, you know, rent control rules, tenant protection rules. Insurance is a mess, although I know that's not California alone, and a lot of stuff like that. But, you know, when you really unpack it, the same things that you hear a lot of investors hate on California about at a broad long-term level are what make investing here really effective over a long period of time. And by that, I mean, like, you know, at the very highest level, supply and demand. So just in preparation for our talk today, I jumped onto CoStar. I looked at every major, you know, market in CoStar in the country that was $50 billion in asset size or larger. I think there's about 20, 25 markets in that list. And then I sorted by vacancy. And so if you know what's going on in the real estate market right now, right, there's a big shift. Obviously, interest rates have thrown cold water all over everyone. We certainly haven't been spared from that. But what isn't really a topic here is competition from new supply. We have a ton of demand tenants. There's just nowhere else to live. It's very, very difficult to build new construction here and make it cost effective unless you just go super luxury on anything or you're using, you know, very complicated kind of affordable housing type capital, which is difficult to do. You can't go build like a regular apartment building for, you know, class B, whatever, workforce house. It doesn't work. Numbers don't work. Never mind that there's no land to do that either. And so the supply and demand imbalance there really helps long-term investors. We did great during the pandemic. Things were in super high demand. We had to deal with all the eviction moratorium and all that kind of stuff. But now that we're in this era where the rental market has softened a little bit, we're really reaping the benefits of that here as landlords in Southern California. So back to my little list. If you sort by vacancy rate in the top markets in the country, four of the top five markets are in California. The number one lowest vacancy market in the country is New York City, which is another market people love to hate on for the same reasons as California. I think the vacancy rate in New York City is 2.6% right now. Directly below New York City's Orange County, followed by Los Angeles, and then San Jose and San Diego. I forgot what order those are in. So they're all in California, and I don't think that's a coincidence. It's just a reality of buying supply-constrained properties that you do well. Of course, there's the rent control you have to worry about. There's specifics of dealing with that. And that does make managing and dealing with properties more challenging here. You know, not going to sugarcoat that. But the reason the rent control rules exist is because that imbalance got so pronounced that they had to legislate on behalf of the tenants in order to make sure that people weren't getting displaced and exacerbating our homeless problem. So yes, although it's a hassle to deal with it, it's symptomatic of the characteristics in the market that make a very stable investment. And because of that mismatch, you get super strong appreciation if you're willing to stick with it for the long run and kind of understand what the rules are.
Everyone's talking about this mass exodus from New York City, from California specifically during COVID. And I mean, there's just not enough housing here, you know, and they're not going to solve it anytime soon. there's just tremendous opportunity. I know they've been trying to come out with better ADU laws. Talk about that. I mean, obviously, as an investor, you know, that's really exciting when you can add another unit to your property, sometimes multiple units to your property. So talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So very well said. Yeah, despite losing a little bit of population, we still have so many people here. There's just no way we're going to really run into, you know, demand side problems. In fact, the state has mandated that cities have to submit their housing elements to the state to show that they're meeting certain targets based on their population for housing production. That's created a battle between the cities and the state because not all the cities want to do that. But a great way that we've had emerge over the last 2 years are these ADU laws. So this started with a package of bills in 2020 that were passed. And basically what an ADU is, for people that aren't familiar or are out of the state, is an accessory dwelling unit. So it's another apartment, but it's built into an existing building or on the land that you may already own. Single family homes are eligible as well as multifamily homes. And the cool thing about ADUs is it bypasses a lot of the zoning requirements by right at the state level that cities would normally require you to do, specifically the parking requirements, which is probably the deal killer for a lot of development deals in Southern California. So the really cool thing about ADUs is, from a solution standpoint, it spreads out the addition of the supply that we need across the market rather than like concentrating it in huge, you know, public housing developments and stuff, which have their own problems that we saw, you know, in the 60s and 70s. So I think it is actually a pretty elegant solution to the problem. And it incentivizes, you know, private owners and small real estate investors to really take advantage of this. So it's a really exciting opportunity here all throughout the entire state of California. The numbers are fantastic on ADUs if you look at them. And so we can get into specifics a little bit, but generally you're either taking garage square footage is the most common in our business. We have a lot of apartment buildings that have tuck under parking, which in their own need to be earthquake retrofitted too. And so if you build ADUs there, you're satisfying structural retrofit requirements as well as adding units to a building. And in that case, you can generally either build 25% of the existing unit count in the garages or two, depending on the configuration of the property and what's there. And typically like a one-car garage is about 200 square feet. So a 2 1-car garages could be like a studio or a small one bed and so on. And to build these, you're probably spending anywhere between like $100,000 to $200,000 per unit, depending on the configuration of utilities, the physical aspects of the property, and how large they are. And in my experience, at least, I do a lot in Long Beach and the South Bay, you're probably getting about a 200% ROI on the value alone. So they just make a ton of sense to build. Great way to add income to properties. We're definitely creating some parking issues, so we're going to need to get some more public transit going, which they're working on. But for an individual investor that really wants to get a little bit of experience with development, but maybe doesn't want to go as crazy as ground up, it's a fantastic way to add value to a property. You can do it with a single family, a duplex, a 10 unit, a 20 unit, whatever. And it's relatively quick compared to going to get entitlements to go, you know, build a new 4 unit or a 20 unit or something like that. Really a great opportunity if you're a California investor.
You said a couple of things that were magic to my ears. 200% return on investment and quick permitting process.
Yep, exactly.
In Manhattan Beach, it's more than doubled since COVID. I don't know what it is of late, but you know, previously was so much faster, and time kills all deals. Certainly, if you're able to get it through, that's amazing. I have a number of friends that are just, you know, really excited about ADUs and building, you know, figure out the best way to maximize that all over the place.
100%. And it's the nice thing about them too, is they're totally an accessible way for individual investors to add value to most properties. You don't have to be, you know, a developer with an MRED and a huge, you know, capital stack behind you and a PE company. You can just go buy a duplex and add a unit, or buy a house and add a couple of units. There's even like pre-approved plans in the city of Los Angeles that they've, you know, kind of agreed to with architects, where they streamline the process even more and say, if you pick this particular plan, this design from this architectural shop, you're going to be able to swing hammers very, very quickly. So yeah, it's a super attractive element of California investing.
So if you're looking to invest in Southern California, what are like, you know, 1, 2, 3 things that you really need to look out for, and maybe a couple things that, you know, make it a really good investment?
Totally. So you got to decide what side of the market you're on. You know, cool thing about California is we have cap rates from the low twos, if you want to buy in like Manhattan Beach or Beverly Hills or Malibu, or maybe even the ones, up to, you know, the mid sixes, if you want to invest in more lower income areas. So first and foremost, you need to decide like what kind of investor are you? Obviously, if you're investing in the super low cap rate stuff, you're going to need a lot of capital. You're going to need a lot of cash. You're not going to be able to borrow much. The value add is going to be extreme and you're not going to get any cash flow. There's definitely people that make a lot of money doing that. On the opposite side of the spectrum, you're probably dealing with a lot of Section 8, you know, and stuff like that, and the problems that come with some of that, but you can do really well there. You have to know the jurisdiction really well where you're going to invest. So we've got a cornucopia of different rent controls and tenant protection rules around now, the largest of which is City of Los Angeles RSO, which is Rent Stabilization Ordinance. So that applies to any 2 units and above in the City of LA built in 1978 or earlier, you're subject to City of LA RSO. That's a very strict version of rent control. They can't tell you what to set your rents for when you get a vacancy, but you can only raise rents up to a set amount. It's been 3 or 4% every year, and we had a full rent freeze for like 4 years in the pandemic. So it's been rough. You can definitely see buildings where you'll have like 2-bedroom units where market would be $2,500 and the rents are like $700. So you have to know what that is going in. If you're the type of investor that's really good with rolling up your sleeves, negotiating with tenants, doing cash for keys, relocation agreements and stuff, there's an extreme amount of value add that you can capture doing those types of deals. And there's a lot of investors that shy away from that. So you can get really, really good deals doing that type of stuff. It's difficult and it's time consuming. The rest of the state has a much milder version of rent control that was passed in 2019. That was through Assembly Bill 1482, or AB 1482, as we call it. That has just cause for eviction protections for tenants and a cap on increases of 5% plus the CPI as you go along. So that's pretty mild and easy to deal with. But make sure you know there's other cities have all kinds of other different rules and things like that regarding tenancy. So if you're going to do multifamily in California, you absolutely have to know your jurisdiction. After that, we have a lot of old buildings and a lot of systems that need to be upgraded, right? So you have to consider that in your underwriting when you're looking at stuff. But again, great opportunity to add value. I would say the sweet spot right now for me looking at deals is probably 5 to 6% cap rates. And in like Southern LA County, like I do a lot in Long Beach, you can get buildings like less than 7 blocks to the Pacific Ocean, to the beach, within the mid fives on a cap rate that might have 6 garages in back where you could do 2 ADUs. And 20% upside in rents. So, you know, that's really an amazing value proposition there if you can understand how to work here within the constraint of our rules. That's kind of like my buy box is something like that. I like to buy probably like 6 to 20-ish unit buildings, 20 to 30% upside in rents, something I can finance. If there's ADU potential, that's an extra huge bonus. You get really good cap rates for going in pretty nice areas. You definitely have to watch those, some of these age requirements, insurance requirements. A lot of our buildings are 100 years old. So you still frequently will see, you know, unanchor bolted foundations, even brick foundations, knob and tube electrical, a whole bunch of these panels from the 60s the insurance companies hate that have to be replaced. You know, a lot of old roofs and galvanized plumbing and stuff like that. That all has to be budgeted for. But properly restored, these buildings can be perfectly fine. They're definitely rent really fast. There's a lot of studios even in our market, small units. I don't have a problem with those. They go pretty well. So that's kind of the stuff that I like to buy. Stuff to watch out for. You know, there's a lot of properties with like non-conforming units. You really need to know what that is, how to work with that, what the rules are going to be with the city if you've got a unit that's non-conforming. Are you going to be able to legitimize it? There's a lot of tenant lawsuits that have flown around. So you have to do your due diligence when you're buying to see what's going on with the tenants, collection issues, stuff like that. You know, unpermitted construction is very common in a lot of these old buildings. But again, you know, that can all be opportunity too.
Last question. What is one thing that you wish you knew maybe 10 years ago or when you started out?
Wow, great question. Other than the future, I wish I knew what the right level of improvements can be for your property. In a lot of these areas, it's really easy to come in and over-improve and waste a whole bunch of money to get maybe $100 more on rent, right? Multifamily, in a lot of cases, is about providing the right product type for the market that you're in and not necessarily overspending on that. I probably could have saved a ton of money early, keeping things light, but renovating them enough to be, you know, attractive, clean, nice, safe place to live, but not going totally overboard. I definitely spent a lot of years just going all the way for it, you know, and borrowing everything I could to upgrade properties that maybe shouldn't have been upgraded quite as far.
Awesome. Great to have you on the show and providing a ton of expertise on investing in Southern California. Anthony, where can listeners find out more about you and your company?
Absolutely. Go to our website at buckinghaminvestments.com. We've got a whole bunch of free educational resources on there. videos, downloads, guides. And we actually have an interactive market research dashboard in the plan section that is our own proprietary market research, which covers the smaller 2 to 4 unit properties as well. Can't find that stuff on CoStar or anywhere else. So we spend a ton of time putting that together. You can slice and dice by zip code, city, and everything. So if you're getting into investing here locally, that's a great free tool. I don't even think we gather your email address for going there. So thanks for having me and thanks for checking us out.
Yeah, appreciate it. Check that out. This is Gary Lipsky signing off. I'll be back next week with another informative episode on the Real Estate Investor Podcast. To all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. And if you like this episode, please head over to iTunes or Stitcher and like, subscribe, and leave a review, as it will help us reach more people. And if you'd like to learn more about what we do at Break of Day Capital, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com and sign up for our newsletter and fill out our investor application. We'll talk to you next week.